You're listening to the Casterbris podcast from Casterbris. Yeah, that's us. Classy and slick as ever. Hi, James.
Hi there.
Oh, it's tied off so well in my head. It was going to be all slick and professional, and then I forgot. We're here to talk about Doctor Who, just for a change, aren't we?
The rhetorical yes.
We are specifically going to talk around the topic of Legend of the Sea Devils. I suppose that the best way of describing Legend of the Sea Devils is Doctor Who and the Legend of the Sea Devils as the inevitable target novelization would be titled.
Yes.
Or the Devils from Beneath the Sea. We're probably Doctor Who and the Legend of the Sea Devils. It is the penultimate 13th Doctor story, which went out on Easter Sunday. Now, if you were a regular listener, of course you are, because you are our listener, you will know that I was away last week, which is why we're not discussing this closer to the episode. I only watched the episode last night. James, how fresh is it in your mind?
It's fairly fresh. Well, I watched it once. I didn't watch it again.
This morning? Oh,
no, I watched it like, there was like a, I think I was 20 minutes behind the episode itself.
Oh, right. Okay. That's impressive. So,
yeah. It was frustrating because, as I think I said to you on WhatsApp, I ended up kind of getting near the end and, for reasons which we will explain, check Twitter, and Janet Fielding, in quite rightly, made a comment about the trailer. So gave the trailer away probably actually about 5 minutes before the actual end of the episode. So I kind of knew what the trailer would be before the episode ended, because I was lagging rather than her being spoiling.
Well, should we talk about the trailer?
Well, I think so, because our listenership is sort of like 40 plus, and I suspect largely grumpy and harking for the good old days. The trailer is probably more interesting to them than the actual show. So,
well, I mean, to be more specific, our listener is nearly 50, and is a nearly 50-year-old man who watches Doctor Who and remembers the good old days when Chris Chibnall went on open air and complained about things.
It's just a guess. Oh, I see. Yes.
Hello. Yeah. Well, I mean, the trailer for me. I mean, there's elements in there that are good. I like the broken face sort of Croton-esque Cyberman, and Daleks. They're there. I like the Sacha Dhawan Master, so that's not really a problem. But the whole, this is the day you die, and then sort of Ace and Tegan, which just, it screws my head because it's so just completely unlikely. I'm still struggling to. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, what doesn't make sense? Well, they might know each other.
I remember Tegan leaving the TARDIS. She wasn't interested in any sort of what? Any. No, why would you be interested?
Okay, well, let's make this. Let's create an analogy for this. Let's say that we are an actor who, and we will call this actor
Tanit Gilding.
Thomas Eccleston Baker.
Okay.
And we leave the show and we have no interest going back to it because essentially it's not fun anymore.
Mm.
And then 20 years later,
getting on for 70
for some
years
reason,
later.
Suddenly it's more interesting again. Now that could be that a dash of money is being put across the desk in a nicely sealed packet. But I think a lot of the times, when you're young, you're ambitious and you're excited. So I know now I'm now going into the actors rather than the characters, but my point being is that at one point in your life, something can no longer be, you distance yourself from it. And then later on, for some reason or another, you come back to it. I think that happens to people. I think it'll be interesting to see, because, I mean, to be fair, one of the things I think Chibnall's always kind of keen on is that dipping, he likes to dip into the pool of the lore, but he doesn't particularly like to massively update it. He is actually, to me, he seems quite someone who wants to tap into that energy rather than sort of reconstruct that energy, which is perhaps more Moffat liked to do. He'd like to sort of look at that stuff in the past, which he loved, and then would try and engineer it into his own character, into his own idioms and his own way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Chibnall does that. So I think that whole point of Tegan having distanced herself will probably come up, because I think that's something which will interest him. And he'll find a way of justifying that, which I don't think which would be too hard. And I don't think it'd be too long, but I think there'll be something there. But I'm surprised. I actually, it's fiction. I kind of don't give a damn. But to be honest, I was more interested with Ace, because Tegan actually got her farewell. And she got her walk to say it was no longer fun anymore. To be fair to Ace and to Sophie Aldred, neither of them got really at a point where they were saying it was no longer fun anymore. Janet Fielding left because she wants to leave, as far as I'm aware. Sophie Aldred, Sylvester McCoy would have done another season and finished on that next season. So in a sense, for Aldred, I think it's nice to be able to get that. And I know she's had multiple endings in comics, books and radio plays.
Yes.
I think in radio plays. But 17 books and or comics. Where she has finished and left the TARDIS. Certainly New Adventures is certainly 17 in there. She was on and off there. But I think it's nice that she gets the opportunity. And it kind of feel with the Ace book, her book, I can't remember what it was called now.
It was essentially the novel, wasn't it? Right, yeah.
There was this sort of interest in the universe and sort of where that character is now and perhaps coming to do that. And obviously the DVD. So again, that was the thing which was going through my head is, given that the DVD has kind of established the charitable enterprise that Russell T. Davis sort of threw away as a glib line in Search for the Doctor for Sarah Jane Adventures, and that DVD followed that, and the book follows that as well. But the book has her meeting Jodie and season one cast. So will that be acknowledged in the show? And I imagine it probably won't be, but I don't know. As I say, because it sort of almost establishes canon anyway through the DVD, I'd be interested to see whether they follow that through.
Well, that would be interesting.
But yeah, I'm just really excited to have Sophie Aldred get that moment to come. I love that. You know, that's why I love No Way Home. You know, I just love the opportunity for, you know, actors and writers who didn't get the chance to actually really finish their story to come back and actually be able to either continue it or to finish it again. And I think that's great. So, yeah, I was excited about the trailer. I didn't really give a damn about anything else, to be honest. Just to have a single frame, literally a single frame, where you can see Sophie Aldred in her old bomber or in a replica of her old bomber jacket smacking a Dalek with a baseball bat, if you freeze that frame, that was like, I'm on board for this. I'm really on board for this. Whatever, the rest of it can all burn, frankly. Just want that bit with Ace being able to batter Dalek, and then if she's shot after that, well, that's it. You know, she's had her finale, and I think that's great. And I love the way that we can do that in television now, that we can pick up old franchises. DC did it with the 1990s Flash. They brought him back for their Arrowverse stuff and gave him a proper farewell. You know, as I say, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield getting that in the recent Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
It's just great. And Michael Keaton obviously doing that in theory in the Flash film, if it happens, given certain actors having a bit of problems at the moment. There's just lots of excitement. It's just really great to be able to do this. And especially with something like Doctor Who, which it amazes me that they've not tapped into doing this more. It really blows my mind. All those companions, all of them interesting, that don't have... It's not like they have massive backstories that the show has to have to inform the new watchers. There is no backstories to them. They're, you know, most of the Doctor Who characters 1989 backwards are actually fairly flat. Their histories are fairly flat. You don't really need to actually give them any sort of, there's no complex arc to them. They can just come back. And it really hasn't done that. Apart from Joe and Sarah Jane, obviously the Brigadier, there hasn't been that many. I mean, we'd love to see what, you know, we've said this before, Ian Chesterton's doing, or how Turlough's sorted out. We'd probably even like to sort of see whether Adric was reduced to dust or is just a corpse on the, you know, a fossil to be found, or is floating in as cinders in Spain, or what, you know, whatever. It'd just be great to see what these characters are doing.
Cinders in Spain sounds like a really bad panto.
Yeah, it was riffing off William Hartnell, and I think I flubbed his flub, so we all flubbed together.
I mean, didn't Adric morph into Manuel in a big Finnish play? Wasn't he played by Andrew Sachs?
Yeah, I think he was, wasn't he?
Yeah, in some sort of weird living in a cave with some sort of Morlocky creatures or something. It was a very long
time
ago.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up. I wasn't aware of him. I mean, I remember, as I've said before on this podcast, in my mind, he survived because the FASA role-playing game had a source book for the Master in about 1988, 1989, and it stated in there quite clearly that the Master picked him up before the explosion and keeps him in an underground base for some reason. And that was enough. It was like, okay, so he survived. I get that. But yeah, I think just revisiting these things is fun. I think it's interesting for, and I think again, going back to what we'll probably talk about a bit today as well, is the whole thing of where Davis is going. And it amazes me again that the show has not tapped into this, because if you're looking to do the JNT thing, which, while fans are disgusted at that thought, every showrunner is thinking about how do we keep the ratings? How do we get the profile?
Yeah.
How do we get the lead stories in the RT or whatever, the Radio Times? That's, you know, you pull from the history. You pull and sort of do something that will interest some people. And when you've got like 50 years of history, it's almost, you know, 60
Nearly
years.
60.
Why are you not doing it more? I'm not saying it should just be a lot, you know, everyday occurrence, but, you know,
think about
the opportunities. And I think the opportunities in actors is probably bigger than the monsters.
Well, let's go because to Legend of the Sea Devils on that.
Okay, yeah, that's a nice segue for once.
Because it has got key monsters that haven't had a significant return in Doctor Who, aside from, you know, Warriors of the Deep. And the one we mentioned last time, the snapshot of the Sea Devil in the 11th Hour, which was, you know, that was 12 years ago. And I think, you know, in our last podcast, we discussed how it might be a little bit disappointing based on the trailer, because you never know whether or not everything's in the trailer or just a little bit of it is in the trailer. And it turned out pretty much everything that was in the trailer was in the first 10 minutes of the episode, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which was nice, because you then, and with the promotional stills as well, you're only revealing really one Sea Devil. We find we've got like a whole army of, well, a whole crew of Sea Devils. We've got this legendary ship, which was obviously the ship that they were looking for. I don't know why they didn't work that out sooner, but yeah, it's another matter entirely. And you've got this Sea Devil who's doing the old kind of the changing the Earth to be more suitable, more habitable for them thing going down, which, I mean, it's kind of a traditional motivation for the original occupants of Earth, but I couldn't help but wonder, it was a little bit unfair on the land-dwelling Silurians. But
yeah,
there's nothing to say they have to get on, is there, really?
I suppose I am what some of the Doctor Few fans, especially the listener, might call a Chibnall apologist. I've seen those words bandied around social media. I saw one tweet once said last couple of weeks, if anyone, those who support this era are actually just sock accounts for the BBC. Basically, they're just the PR department. No one likes to see Vera. The only people do it, and I've seen people going back to the ratings and trying to prove again, you know, that ratings and people just don't really understand how television works. And it was, and the whole line as well, that RTD was brought in to rescue the series when, you know, everyone knew Chibnall was on a 3-year contract. You know, he said he was only going to do those 3 series and then walk. There's no doubt about that. You know, this was going to happen.
So you're a Chibnall apologist and a BBC sock puppet.
I think that's largely what I would be probably labelled if anyone did care what came out of my said mouth. But they don't, and neither do I. But I have to say, on this occasion, boy, was I bored through this one. It was terrible.
Do you know what? I quite enjoyed it early on, but there was this point sort of, I'm guessing it felt like halfway through, but it's probably two-thirds of the way through, where it just seemed to lose itself and everything that was happening just suddenly became a bit of a mess, and there's a lack of explanation. There's no logic following through, and it just started to fall apart.
It's an episode. I hate saying that as well, because I know how much work that goes into these shows. I know the deadlines that they're working against. I know that it's not, you know, these are not, it's not like building a car. It's a very organic process sort of putting together any story.
Yeah.
So I feel terrible saying that. But I'd have to say, you know, I did not enjoy it. I did not enjoy it at all. There was not one bit of it I really enjoyed. I mean, I thought I liked the colours. I mean, in the last 10 years, the BBC have been really dunking into those sort of turquoise and rich blues.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I thought the outfits were great. And I think what's really interesting, especially since so, you know, for once possibly, I sort of fell in with my aged brethren who, as I say, are not Chibnall apologists and hate so many of them. Not so many of them. I hate them. So many people. There are a lot of people who feel of our group, of our caliber, of our age, who are not happy with Jodie Whittaker's era and Chibnall. And I could see that I was suddenly within that group. But what amazed me about it is because also I'm not a big Pertwee fan, and I felt that those people who love Pertwee but hate Jodie's era should really love that episode, because it was just quintessential 70s. I'd love to know what Gareth Cavanagh thought about this. You know, I mean, that damn Nimon apologist. I would love to know what he thought about this one, because, you know, the characters were utterly flat, as often they were in the 70s shows. You know, they were very basic characters. Characters would join the team with very little sort of energy, you know, characters just watched their family die and they would just jump on board to the exciting adventure.
There was a bit of that,
The outcome of that as well, when he becomes part of the crew, that felt like very 70s. The fact that you had one person running a ship, which I don't think is actually possible, that again felt very 70s, because, you know, you've got a limited amount of people you can afford, less time, so you just have the one person running a ship. I could just see that in a Pertwee. The Sea Devil's agenda felt very Pertwee. There was a lot of running backwards and forth needlessly. The editing was bad. And so, I say bad. Okay. I hate using terms like that. I think they're not good. It didn't feel tight. I wondered whether it was a longer episode, which they
cut down. Yeah.
And that's why the editing felt weird. And there was bits that didn't kind of make sense. And I think that's possibly because it was made longer. And then perhaps they thought for Easter they'd get a longer slot, maybe for some reason, whatever, it was reduced. That seems unlikely, but it felt like it wasn't meant to be 45 minutes. It was meant to be longer. It just felt, and it was colourful. It was, you know, it was fun. It was light. It felt very Pertwee-like to me, and slightly nonsensical, but sensical enough. You know, it all made sense, but it just didn't really feel very real. That's where it kind of worked for me. And so I felt this was very much like old classic Doctor Who, something Chibnall's actually quite good at doing. But funnily enough, older fans don't like it when he does it. I mean, that first series of his, season 11, was quintessentially season 11? Yes, season 11 was quintessentially old style Doctor Who. It was you could see what he was reaching for. He was reaching for the 60s.
Yeah.
He was trying to do a 60s vibe, a slower, more thoughtful, lots of history stuff in there, you know, this companion dynamic. That's what he's reaching for. Now, an older fan or an anti-Chibnall, a non-apologist, would probably say, well, he reached and he failed. And that's fair enough. I get that. That's an opinion. I'm not going to go against that. But this felt like that sort of era, and I hated it. I just felt bored.
It was meandering at times. I mean, it wasn't particularly bad, and I didn't feel there was anything particularly offensive. And I did chuckle to myself every time I heard the name Ji-hun, because I wasn't expecting Philip Glenister.
But
I kept mishearing it as Gene Hunt.
I see. Thank you for making straddling that gap for me, because I hadn't managed it. Grabbing my hand as I fell down the chasm of your pun.
It's entirely
Pun Canyon.
I'm also a little bit disappointed for some of the guest cast. Madam Ching, Crystal Yu, was excellent in Casualty, and sometimes there are guest cast members in Dot 2 that absolutely knock it out of the park, and I think she did very well with what she was given. But...
Absolutely. I suppose I should backtrack a bit and U-turn. I mean, there was nothing inherently wrong with it. You know, the acting was fine. To say the production was fine. I thought it made enough sense for Doctor Who, which is meant to be crazy. I just didn't get behind it. At first I thought maybe it's because I've been watching too many South Korean dramas recently and getting used to, when watching sort of world cinema, having it all in subtitles and then suddenly seeing something which was obviously meant to sort of sit around China, and suddenly everyone having London accents blew me. And I was thinking, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just being too, I'm not intentionally snobbish, but maybe I'm just not making that adjustment back to what Doctor Who does. But no, it was just, I kind of felt, everything just felt, I just didn't buy any of it. I think I didn't buy into any of the tension. The Sea Devil seemed absolutely impotent to threat. It didn't feel threatening to me at all. It felt like it was constantly being out-talked by Jodie, Jodie's doctor, even when there wasn't a threat. There was the other Pertwee thing, and not just Pertwee thing, the classic, I've spent too much time talking about my love life, and now the ship's going to blow up, and I'm going to have to sacrifice. Oh, here comes the character who obviously has to redeem himself in some way or another, who's been trapped and is now out of time, so doesn't really fit anywhere. He will go and sacrifice himself for me. And that sort of thing. You know, there's a lot of those sort of tropes in there, which was just like, it felt messy. I think to do this well, and it's easy for me to say this from my chair, not with the pressures of having to create a popular television show, but this is one example where I think Base Under Siege is what they should have done, and had the Sea Devil have them stay on the island in that place. The Sea Devil's wanting something there, and have the Base Under Siege thing. And I think you'd have had a more enjoyable story, and the Sea Devils would have had a far more sort of threat. But as it was, there's just too many things going on. I didn't buy Jodie leaving Dan. I didn't buy Dan heading off to go to the boat with this guy he just met. It just all felt a bit.
Yeah, the worst elements of classic Doctor Who, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's the problem for me. And how about you? I know you've sort of kind of said that you didn't. It wasn't, and I agree with you. It wasn't. Maybe I was just expecting more out of it. I think because we've had a lot of good stuff.
Well, I thought Flux was pretty good. This is something I was thinking
Christmas
about.
Christmas was good.
Because this is the penultimate story. So, mate, and you know, we were spoiled with Russell T Davies and perhaps the first half of Moffat's era. I was expecting something a bit more, a bit heavier. You know, Tennant's final story was a two-parter, but prior to that, we had Wars of Mars, which is obviously a very notable
Doctor
Who. But
at Easter, we had
Planet of the Dead, which didn't
do anything for me. Yeah,
no.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and far less portentous. And Legend of the Sea Devils is, you know, it's more Planet of the Dead than it is like Waters of Mars, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Which I mean, I've never been 100% behind Jodie's Doctor, and the last year has changed that for me. I think I've really enjoyed Flux overall, but I think this is a letdown for her. I think she's going to go out, and if Doctor Who's going to be reborn, shall we say, with Russell T Davies, because I have a feeling it's going to be quite drastic. I would have preferred her to be going out on a couple of stronger stories, and this doesn't really fulfil that criteria for me.
Yeah, and I think also, like we just said, it's worth remembering that every era, every
And that's the, as we've said before, there's a problem with eras, is that you start creating boundaries that are kind of, while they do have certain markers, they there's no proof of quality. And as I say, Planet of the Dead to me was tedious. I hated it. I was bored all the way through. It just didn't, I did, again, for similar reasons, didn't hit home for me. I didn't feel the characters. I didn't believe the characters. I didn't see the connections. I didn't feel the threat. I just felt like I was plodding along. It happens all the time. It's not anything really to do with, and I know you're not saying this, it's nothing to do with Jodie, and it's, I don't think it's anything to do with Chibnall particularly. Sometimes you just do something which doesn't quite work. And yeah, sadly, this one just didn't deliver anything. I just, from the very beginning, and I thought, I have to say, I thought some of the, and this isn't important because, you know, it's Doctor Who, some of the effects were pretty ropey compared to what I've been used to.
Yeah.
The skipping stones look terrible. You know, just small things like that.
How big's your TV?
It's big enough.
Roughly?
I watched it on a... I don't know.
Did you watch it on?
I watched it on a flat screen television.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, is it 40-inch, 50-inch? Is it like one of those big ones?
It's big enough. I don't know. It's not massive.
Ours is 20. It's either 28-inch or 32-inch, and the reason for that is because the part of the wall that it's mounted on, it has to be that size, otherwise we can't mount the TV where we want it to go. And then we sit quite a way across the room from it, so it's not too dissimilar from watching TV in the old days when you had a little TV and then you sit on the sofa at the other side of the room. And I didn't notice any particular problem with the pebbles, which is why I was asking you how big your TV was, because I was wondering whether it was actually a resolution thing.
It could be a resolution. It's a reasonable TV. It's not massive like a lot of people have these days, but it's, you know, it's a good size living room television. And yeah, to me, again, it's Doctor Who, so it didn't take me out of the story. I'm not marking it down for it, but there was just bits of it which I was like, and you know, small things again, very Pertwee like, because it reminds me of Frontier in Space. The pirate ship, they had two boats, which was obviously the same set, and with very minor redressing, because there's only so much you can redress a certain scale, set. And again, that's Doctor Who for you. But there was just a bit of me which was just like, all this is just, it's getting in the way. There's too many things going on here that the audience can't really grapple with anything. And I think that's what spoilt it. And I know some people felt the heart was, and for them, that's great, was the Yaz Doctor thing. And that was their heart for the story. I still don't buy into that. I still find it weird. I don't feel I believe it, and that's nothing again to do with the actors. It's nothing again to do with, I suppose, to me, the Doctor's like 2,000 years old. This person's 20, and an alien, and I just don't see. I can see what a 20-year-old would see in the Doctor. I don't see what anyone like the Doctor would see in someone like Yaz or Rose, and I find that step hard to make.
Yeah.
And this time round, where that sort of ambiguity has been really scaled away, been pulled out, thrown out the window, I find it even harder still, because there's no ambiguity there.
The thing is, as well, you've got Rose, you've got Martha, and you've got River Song, and you've got a little bit of Amy as well, and maybe a bit of Clara, and, you know, a couple of exceptions that lasted a season. In amongst those, it's kind of territory that's been well treaded already anyway, isn't it? And the most different thing you could probably do with it has been done, which is the River Song thing. So it would be nice if they just leave it for a while and remember that the Doctor is an alien, and rather than the Doctor having this sort of closeness with so many companions in such a short space of time. And I know it was implied that there was a closeness with Sarah Jane as well, which we didn't see. But
that was a retcon, wasn't it?
That's a retcon, yeah. It just feels like there's nothing new to be said there to me, really.
Well, like I said, I think for me, we've said this before, one of the things that gets me about it is it kind of, you do kind of look back at, even as a retcon, you look back at it and you go, okay. You start questioning, like Ace and the Seventh Doctor, to me, that was a sort of uncle relationship.
Yeah.
And now, I'm not for a minute saying it was anything else, but it's suddenly, it doesn't feel like an uncle anymore.
It's on the table, isn't it?
But I think my big issue with it is actually less to do with the Doctor having a relationship. It's more that Earth companions are a weird story construct. You know, they're there to be relatable, but they're also there to have to do fantastical things. And I therefore don't find them very believable. I accept them because it's a story and I accept what they've got to do, but I don't find them very real. I don't find Yaz real because Yaz does things in a way that I don't think a person like Yaz would do. I don't think you would adapt to that sort of world as easily. You know, I just don't think people do that. You know, to become a soldier, you have to go through years of training. And I know they'd say, well, she's gone through years of training going with all the, you know, experience with a doctor. But I don't think it's as simple as that. And yeah, you've got to put that sort of aside, especially when they've got no goal, when the only goal is to be with that person. It just feels a bit weird. I mean, you can say, okay, Ian Chesterton, he too became a little more large than life. You know, he was able to fight Romans and the like, and he was just a school teacher. But in the end, it felt you would let that go because he was honest. He was on a story. His story was to get home. And that was part of that tale. Well, with this, in a weird way, I think Clara almost sort of kind of hit it on the head that the only outcome of their story is to think that they can become like the Doctor because they've got nowhere else to go. That's the only life they want. So they're either going to live up to that, which inevitably a human's not going to be able to, or they're going to fail. And so I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. I just don't believe that storyline. Because what you're trying to say is that they're becoming better and better and better and better, and that's where they're aiming to be.
There's an element with William Russell in that he was William Russell, and he already had quite a successful TV career before Doctor Who, so maybe there was some expectation that he would be doing some action stuff anyway, and that's really why he was cast, wasn't it, as someone to get his hands dirty, whilst the William Hartnell, older actor, did sort of grandfatherly stuff. So there's maybe an expectation in that. But aside from that, yeah, I would agree pretty much with what you're saying there. It is the thing. I mean, there's also the other side. I mean, this links into it a little bit as well. The, you know, that relationship, this so-called heart of the episode and everything, it is there and it is a kind of a form of grounding. But there is nothing in this, and this has happened a lot, even with the episodes set on Earth, that really sort of makes Doctor Who, it doesn't really ground it in our world, particularly at the moment. And this goes back a few years. This isn't just this episode. So, the solution is obviously the direction of the show changing, because it's not really something that's, it just doesn't, none of it feels like it could happen. None of it feels real. And I remember, and I mean, I don't know, sort of turn this into sort of a Russell T. Davies appreciation episode, because I'm absolutely certain I will be, have lots of things to say about the future Doctor Who series when it comes along. But you did feel that those things could be happening in our world, because it did feel like a reasonably accurate representation, you know, starting off with Rose and Rose's life, working in a shop and all that sort of stuff, again with Martha, again with Donna. It did feel recognisably our world, whereas progressively over the years, and again, I suppose with the classic series, it was the same. It started off with an unearthly child, and it felt like our world. And again, with Spearhead from Space, it felt like our world. And with Rose, it felt like our world. And, you know, as the series goes on, it drifts away into its own sort of take on the world, and it loses that grounding, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there is an error in, I start to sound like I'm a backseat. I don't like, let's make it personal, let's make it a personal observation rather than as if I'm stating a fact. I don't like having this sort of, you progress things by either pushing them forward so people don't notice stuff, or you push them forward to say stuff's happened in between. So in one case, you get the pushing forward so you don't notice stuff. So, for instance, the Flux. You know, you've had a massive world universe ending catastrophe, not mentioned by one line in the Dalek one, and that was to do with the TARDIS, wasn't to do with the universe. That to me is when you push forward and hope people forget, move on. I understand that in television there's a logic to that. The other side, and I see this happen a lot, and Picard did this recently in season two, where you try, I feel that they with the Doctor and Yaz relationship, I kind of feel they've sort of almost suggested that a lot of its build-up has happened off screen. That point between the previous season and the Flux, that their relationship had got a lot tighter.
Yeah.
And while I think there was little bits before that, which especially Thasmin fans have picked up on, and that's fine, as a watcher who doesn't really care that much either way, I didn't feel the building of that relationship. So I feel kind of cheated, and I kind of feel it's almost said it's happened off screen. And Picard's done this with two of their crew characters, where one of them, they were meant to have created a stronger rapport off screen that we didn't see in the previous season. And then one of them is in bad state and the other's furious because of it. And like, you know, and upset. And it's as if they've known them for years. And as an audience, you're like, but last season, you barely talked to the person, and now suddenly you're best friends. And you'll say, well, that's the passage of time. And it's like, you, as an audience, that is extremely unsatisfying. So I think, yeah, with Yaz, it kind of felt like I think good romances come from the building blocks. You feel them slowly build. And often I think audiences like it when it feels like they happen almost organically.
Yes.
And so the best ones happen over a long period of time. Which is why I don't think I particularly like Rose, because it kind of felt that was being established within like 10 episodes and then that was it. You know, best ones take a few seasons and then you get to like both characters, and then when they start coming together, you go, oh, I kind of like this. I like them. I want them to be happy. Go for it. But I don't know. Like I say, there's a lot of people who love the Yaz and Doctor, and a lot of people who love the end of the Sea Devils, and that was a really special time. And there was one on Twitter saying that their daughter was... their very young daughter was saying, I hope Yaz gets to kiss the Doctor. And it's just like, well, that's great. You know, that's a really great comeback. If I was a writer or part of the show and I read that, I would be thrilled to think that was the out, you know, that some of my audience were feeling that way. But unfortunately, this sad, grumpy bastard perhaps doesn't. But yeah, it's the first one in a while that I just felt flat.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree with that, because the Dalek one was pretty inventive as well. It was a nice. You know, they did something different with the Daleks. Did something different with the format of an episode as well, and it made a nice change. So yeah, I mean, we tend to. And yeah, a little stumble there, because I can't remember whether we did it at the New Year episode or not. But we do tend to throw numbers at Doctor episodes, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
And I am wondering what numbers we might throw at this one.
Well, if I was to throw a number at this one, I would throw quite a high one, just because it'd be double digits and it might actually hurt. But that's not the point, is it? And that's abusive. We don't want to abuse an episode.
No.
So we will... I mean, I'd give it a 4. You know, it looked pretty, but I wanted to turn over. If I wasn't a fan, I'd have turned over.
Well, do you know what? I'm going to give it 5 because I like Sea Devils.
Yeah, and again, I think the Sea Devils, I think the problem with the Sea Devils and the Silurians is they have a one-track storyline, don't they? And you kind of feel like it'd be more interesting if maybe it was a Sea Devil who was against the other Sea Devils, or a Sea Devil who was actually, I know that's very Moffat, but... I think with the Sea Devils, you need to try and find other ways to make them interesting. In the same way Silurians, I suppose, with the Pas Nostragon, you know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, there maybe isn't the scale to do something particularly interesting, but there was always the Blood Heat, which I think we mentioned a few episodes back.
Yeah.
Which was a good take on Silurians and Sea Devils.
Yeah, I think this one, there was just too many... It felt like there was just too many things going into this pot, and that it was being stirred fast. Some of it tipped out, and what was left, it just didn't have enough to sort of settle. I think, like with so many works, is that if you don't have much space, you strip it back. You don't double down. And there was just so much in there which just needed to be stripped back. The leaping through time, the historical characters, which I don't think many British people are very au fait with. So that didn't really connect with them, and that's our own ignorance, obviously. So I'm not saying that how dare these show try and educate us on stories and tales and history that we don't know. But when it's all thick and fast, you don't have time to really appreciate any of it. And I think that was the problem for me. It was just too thick and fast. If it slowed down and had a more simple story, you'd have had more space for everything to breathe. And, you know, the look and the colours and the sea devil, and you could have had a few characters in there and a little more tension, and just strip it back. Don't need the monster under the water. We don't need the second base. We don't need the second ship. Like I said, you could have stripped that back to being ship and land.
Yeah.
And literally had it a fight between the sea and the land in the past, and that would have been great. Possibly.
It was a bit Bond movie, that base as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't quite get it. I thought it was inside the monster, because you know you'd seen the TARDIS almost being eaten by one. I couldn't work out where the monster was, and then suddenly they're shooting up and down, and I like the way they swing down to the boat, and then when they're in trouble, they somehow seem to swing back up to the boat, which we don't see properly because that would be very difficult because it's higher than them. And it just, none of it just worked. And it's frustrating because I know I want it to work, because I don't want to go onto Twitter and just see everyone angry and sort of feeling victorious that this proves that. I saw one person sort of trying to point out how this Easter episode compares to Easter episodes in 2008 prove how bad the show's got and how no one's watching it and how Russell T. Davis will save it. And it's just like, you can't do that. Two different eras of television massively changed. I mean, eras of television have shifted in the last 7 years. You know, a couple of years ago, I'd be talking about, the era of streaming and Netflix, you know, it started in 2013 and now in a totally different ballpark. You can't do that. You can't make those comparisons.
Well,
television's not consumed in the same way. It's not watched in the same way.
Let's have a look at the ratings whilst we're on that topic, then.
Okay.
The episodes watched, this is what's been logged on Wikipedia, and it agrees with what I've already read. The episode was watched by 2.2 million viewers overnight, becoming the 11th most watched programme of the day, which indicates that the good weather around the UK would certainly have played a part in that. And an audience appreciation index score of 76, which isn't great. And the final consolidated ratings for the episode was 3.47 million, making it the lowest post-2005 episode and the second lowest in Doctor Who's entire history, ahead only of Battlefield Episode 1 in 1989. Now, I have to say, while I don't watch an awful lot of television, I do spend quite a bit of time on the internet, mainly due to my work, and I did not see an awful lot of promotion for this episode.
But
what I did see was Scottish musician Nathan Evans singing an adaptation of the sea ballad Wellerman, which frankly made me want to smash every computer in my house in case I ever saw or heard it again. So I don't think that was great promotion publicity for the episode.
Well, there was very little publicity, and I guess it's a time of the year where they're not going to pump much in. But, I mean, again, we look at these ratings, and I can't speak about you, but I think about how I consume television now to how I consumed television 2008 as a Doctor Who fan.
Mm.
It's totally different.
Yeah. But at the same time, we do have shows that are breaking that. And obviously, Doctor Who's been on air almost constantly for 17 years. So there is that, obviously, the diminishing returns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Aspect to this. But with it being bigged up that the Doctor's leaving, there's only two episodes left, and, you know, pirates, monsters from the deep. I don't know. I would have thought about 5 million. So I do think that is particularly low, to be honest with you.
I mean, I say I didn't think it was a good episode, but I can't pretend that I was particularly galvanised from the trailer or by the idea. So I think pirate stuff is extremely hard to do on a low budget.
Well, as we've seen with the other Doctor Who episode with pirates.
Curse of
Black Spot.
I agree. And I wasn't particularly enthralled by the idea. Sea Devils, I was quite interested to see, because I thought it was quite brave of them to try and take that design and do something with it. I don't think it was wholly successful, but that's a hard thing to do. Kudos to them.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it, to be honest with you, the Sea Devil. I think it looked okay.
I'd be interested to see how it changes when Russell T Davies comes back. I wonder.
Well, hang on. I'm going to press a button.
I'll press your button.
Okay. Shit, that's the wrong one. Slick as ever. Okay, so Russell T Davies is coming back. As is Gerald the Butler, apparently. So the thing is, okay, there's one more episode of Chris Chibnall's Doctor Who. After that, we know that Russell T Davies, Bad Wolf TV, Sony Television Pictures, they're all in there, in bed together, creating a new Doctor Who. Now, this is what I think, and you can disagree with me. You can agree with me. You could think I'm completely batshit crazy. You might think it's just going to continue on. It's not going to do that. I think it's going to be a complete reboot. I don't think there's going to be any tangible continuity beyond what we have in our minds of what we know as Doctor Who. And in, you know, I think this is going to be, I think, I'm not going to say it's definitely going to be, but I think this is an opportunity to take Doctor Who as far away from what we know as Doctor Who 1963 to 2005 as the Marvel Cinematic Universe has taken the Marvel characters away from the comics. And just go in a completely different direction with it. In, I guess, pretty much the same way which everyone was up in arms about in 1994, 1995, 1996, 1997, the idea that the TV show that was in development in the US for Doctor Who's resurrection over the water would have dipped into what we know of Doctor Who, but represented things in a completely different way. And I think it's going to, I can see it going in that direction, because I can't really see an easy way back from what's happened with the show and the flux and the things with the Doctor's backstory and the relationship with the Master developing in the way that it has, and then some more in a new way. It just feels like a good... And because last time round, Russell T Davies had 9 years of distance between Doctor Who, or, you know, 16 years if you want to go back to Survival. This time round, we're talking like a year, 18 months. So there's an opportunity here to do something quite decisive without continuing it on in the way that we've seen before. I could be completely wrong with this.
But we've already had
the idea of different universes and a multiverse introduced in Doctor Who. So shifting things across seems like a logical step from that. What do you think?
Well, I would have agreed with you, but I can't bring myself to agree with someone who's so incompetent that they can't hit the right button to do a segue after 12 years of doing the show or whatever it is. You know,
I've only had this desk like a month or two.
I think to some degree I agree. I think there will be a soft reboot, but I don't think it will be any more drastic than the soft reboots that we've seen pretty much in each producer run.
Mm-hmm.
Jodie's run, Drop the Ring, the River Song Ring, down onto the floor and into the TARDIS, you know, signifying that River Song and that stuff was of the past, moving on. You know, this is the first episode where we've even had a reference to Song, really. I think there'll be that sort of soft reboot. But I don't think he's going to... I think what they're running for at the moment to sort of do a Marvel means, if they're doing a Marvel, and I think that's about keeping tapped into your assets, your franchise assets. So they might be reinvented to a degree, but it's also about trying to consolidate ties. Because the one thing I think that Disney showed with Sony... with No Way Home, and, you know, help Sony along with this, is that if you take your old shows, your old films, your old franchises, and you drop them in, not as reboots, but as, you know, as part of the fresh stuff, you suddenly extend your franchise. Suddenly Sony's not just got a two average Venom films and a really bad Morbius film. They've suddenly got, you know, a whole load of Spider-Man films attached to the Marvel universe as well. You know, so they've got Tom Holland to a degree in their universe. They've got five extra Spider-Man films suddenly become part of their continuity. It's part of their Spider-Verse franchise, the Sony-verse. And that, I think, is the way that they want to do things. And I think Russell T. Davis's changes will be in the model. I think it'll be less to do with the narrative. I think he'll do the same as always. He'll carry continuity when it suits him. He'll ignore it when it doesn't suit him. But I think what it'll be about trying to jazz up the model. And, you know, I would not be entirely surprised if Jodie Whittaker regenerates and the regeneration splits into six doctors. And you have six doctors over the next year, six standalone doctors, which build up to a story where there's only one.
Why classic six?
I'm just thinking of a classic ex-Superman story. When Superman died, came back in, there was like four or five different Supermans. Who was the real Superman?
Right.
These sort of things work in comics. The Spider-Man clone saga, where Spider-Man once had a clone made of him, which was destroyed, comes back and actually says he's the real person. The one we've been following is the clone all along. And you have a good 5 years of them working together backwards and forth to work out who's the real one. I could see them doing that. The reason I say six is none whatsoever. It's fairly arbitrary. But I would think if you're going to split it, yeah, you could do it into three. But I'm just thinking you could do a year with six stories, six individual stories of six individual doctors, which could be a mixture of old cards. You could bring Tennant back for one. You could bring Hugh Grant in for one. And they could all be of the same doctor split in a way that allows them to sort of... And that would automatically shift interest into what the hell Doctor Who's doing. You'd propel yourself into who is the real doctor? Are they all the real doctor? You could do something like that. As I've said before, you could do stuff which is set before William Hartnell with just one-off Doctor Who stories a la standalone procedural stories. And that'd be fine. And again, you would not be breaking continuity. It would all sit in continuity, but you would not be doing that thing of focusing on the Hartnell to Jodie. You would be soft rebooting because you'd be kind of trying to do new stuff rather that sits in the same thread but doesn't need to be situated or to be focused on the past. And that's the sort of thing I'd imagine doing. I imagine doing more of that sort of stuff than a unit story, a unit series or you know, a separate Paul McGann series. I could see him doing, as I say, limited series, like a three. And I think that's what he would probably do. I could see him getting McGann back for a three episode mini story, you know, three hour long arc like the Flux with Paul McGann. Why not? So I think that's what he would probably be trying to do, is try and sort of soft reboot and then tap into what's useful and what's interesting. But I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be about him hyperfixating over the Flux and stuff like that. I imagine the end of this era will be Chris and Davis kind of sort of shutting it down and leaving it open wide. And that might be the sort of the multiverse. That could be the way to do it because it's been mentioned that the walls break down a bit, sort of almost like Cardiff, but on a big scale and you can do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Or as you say, or time could be just totally rejigged and, you know, another kind of time war, but just in, you know, one movement, which, you know, Moffat did in his era of the Big Bang. And then totally ignored it from pretty much there on. But, you know, I think you're right. I think there will be a kind of a feeling of, not because, and this is what, as I say, people say it's just because Chibnall's crap and he's here to make it go right. I think it's more fundamental than that. And you said it earlier. This is a 16-year-old show from its current production. That is old. That is, it's more than that. It's very, very old. You don't get shows going this long. You know, they just don't. Very few of them do.
Yeah,
and people get tired. They as you called it, you had a term for it, sort of a spiraling, whatever.
Law of diminishing returns. I said.
Yeah, law of diminishing returns. That's what you said. That's exactly what you said.
Yeah.
I would just sort of say, you know, things, everything in life becomes banal. It's just the way that we work. We adjust to stuff. It's how surgeons work. Yeah. You know, we actually, we get accustomed to the things and they become less interesting. And that's kind of where Doctor Who is. It's not really about Chibnall or Jodie as much as fans would love to say it is, or some fans. It's to do with the fact that it's old, and it's hard to keep it interesting. It's hard to keep it interesting for them. It's hard for the writers to find new ways of doing it. And I think that's what Davies is here to do, is to try and shift the format so it can be interesting. Because, like I say, what else is he going to do? Bring back a middle-aged white guy to be the Doctor, and that will solve everything. You know, no, it won't. It will still have the same problems if it carries the same formula. He will look to do something different, and I just wonder if that's the way to do it. You've got the Doctor, and I think what Chibnall's really shown us is that you can say, take this Doctor and say, well, I suppose Moffat did as well, you know, fuck 12, 13 regenerations. We could have as many Doctors as we like. That's the selling point of the show. We can bring in any actor we want. Why are we locked down on this? Let's go with this. Let's play around with it. Let's make it interesting. Let's make it a feature. But we'll see. And that would explain, you know, people sort of saying Hugh Grant being contacted and David Tennant being contacted or being involved. It could be something like that. It could be it's not that there's one singular Doctor coming up. Because that's what I would do, I think, if I was trying to jazz things up. Because you're either only going to have another woman, another man, essentially. It's going to be one of those sort of identifications of, we've done those, so what else are you going to do? It's like, well, let's do multiple. And then watch the fans cry havoc.
Well, I mean, at this point, it appears only the fans are watching Doctor Who, so it needs to go bigger than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I mean, maybe some of the fans are. I mean, who are the fans? I mean, that's
well, who indeed?
I mean, I'm a fan. I have lots of things to watch.
We don't tend to use that term very often, do we? Really?
Well, we don't, because as I've said before, I'm a critic. I critique. I'm not a fan. But I mean, my point being is that I think even within, I mean, fans, it's a, you know, as we know, fandom's a very murky term. It covers a wide gamut of types of people, different interests, different engagements, different ways of consuming.
Yeah.
You know, my mum's watched it since 1963. She wouldn't buy any products from it. You know, you'd say that she's a fan. But I just wonder how many people who aren't the hardcore lot, and maybe some of the hardcore lot, you know, when there's so many shows to watch, they're not so bothered about it because they've seen so many. It's, history repeats itself, isn't it? You know, it's a JNT situation where it becomes part of the mantelpiece. It's people expect Doctor Who to be on, you know, they might watch it, might not. There's other things to be watching. Oh, I've missed it. Oh, well, you know, I've got the other show I'm watching at the moment. I've got 14 shows I'm watching at the moment. I'll catch it sometime. And it becomes, and then it gets kicked off and then everyone's in, when's Doctor Who coming back? We've seen it before. You know, I'm looking forward to the point where people turn around and start going, oh, yeah, Jodie, that was the classic era. Yeah. No, I loved that one, you know, in India. That was great. In The Flux, that was that was classic.
That one with the Sea Devils.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see it all the time. I remember for years when McCoy's era was considered to be the abomination, and now it's classic Who.
Yeah.
You know, who can forget Happiness Patrol and The Curse of Fenric? You know, at the time, oh, look at their stupid fingernails in The Curse of Fenric. They don't look scary.
Hanging from his umbrella in Ice World.
Yeah, exactly. And then suddenly it's now like, oh, well, you know, we loved it. You know, Ace is coming back. Everyone's going, amazing Ace. You know, at the time, everyone's like, Ace, she's not very real. People don't speak like that.
Well, yeah.
So it spins round, and I think that's going to be the only that's the upside, I think, for Chibnall and Jodie. When there's some distance, I think, and people calm down, they'll look back at it. In the same way, I mean, as I've said before, I've gone back to Moffat stuff sometimes, and I've actually enjoyed it more now with some distance than at the time, where I think my expectations of what I wanted were not being met. And now I know what I'm going to get. I can sit and watch and enjoy them more. You know, that's how it works. We will see.
Indeed, yeah, we will.
Oh dear! Oh dear! Oh dear! Oh dear! I one more thing I said about Sea Devils. I did think it was a ballsy thing to do because, you know, it's so easy to just do stuff set in the future or to do it you know, in easy contemporary settings, pirate stuff was a different way of doing the story, different doing a Geordi story. And it didn't work for me, but you know, it was a risk.
They gave it a good go. It fell flat in overall, I suppose, and reflected in the ratings that we've given the episode. I like the Sea Devils, obviously more than you do, but yeah, I think it was. I just wanted more from it at this stage in the Doctor's time, with it drawing to a close. Yeah, I just wanted a bit more from it. There's another thing as well about that trailer. Going right back to the beginning of today's episode, is the shot of the Doctor apparently regenerating, which, with the Master telling her she's going to die and everything, I do wonder whether that is actually going to happen. And that's kind of one of the things that's sort of leading me into the idea of the, you know, it just ending and then just continuing in the next universe or whatever. But I do like the idea of lots of doctors taking it in turns or whatever, find out who's the real doctor or whatever.
It's just a thought.
It's an angle.
I mean, it's an angle. I mean, I think if Russell D. Davis actually said, I'm going to do it in a different universe and pretty much shut this down, it's almost kind of been insulting to Chibnall and to Moffat, who, you know, ratings have been going down with both of them for different reasons. You know, it kind of feels like you're saying, "Oh, you failed. I'm doing the new stuff." I don't think he'll do that. I think
you don't even need to do that, really, because what you could actually do, you could kill the Doctor and then bring in a Doctor from a different universe anyway.
You who's could
completely I mean, new to everything.
But then again,
you've got a Doctor who doesn't know what he or she is up against, and that. But you're that's nice, you're isn't it?
You're almost informing the discourse, though, that the woman Doctor was the bad idea, so bad that we had to totally move forward in a different way. I think he will have the change. He will move it forward rather than back. And where he does borrow from the back, it will be to try and push it forward. I think you're right in that sense. I do think it will be a reboot, and it could be to do with the multiverse. I think he will shake things up so he's got space to play. But I think I still think that Chibnall's Doctor approach as a writer will be something that will interest Davis, because it opens up a whole era of the Doctor that we'd know nothing about, which could be fun to play in and to create stuff from and to use. So I think, I mean, I see the Ruth Doctor has got a Big Finish play now as well. Big Finish stories.
John Martin.
Yeah.
Right.
What do they call it? They call it the Renegade Doctor. They call it, there's a term they now use for her.
I think,
and I've forgotten it. Is it Renegade Doctor? But I think it might be. But I think that's great. You know, it is being embraced and it's opening up the possibilities. And I think that's what Russell will like. But we shall see. But yes, it was a disappointing Easter, I must admit.
Did you not get any chocolate eggs?
I had a little bit of chocolate. Oh. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we had an Easter Doctor Who, and that should be appreciated, you know.
Well, I think every episode of Doctor Who should be appreciated, whether they're enjoyed or not. It's a continuation of the almost 60-year-old story adventurer.
You think back to 2005, would you have imagined it would still be going in 2022?
No.
I must admit, I never really thought about it.
5 years would be optimistic.
Exactly. And I think that shows, while the BBC perhaps doesn't support it as it should do, it's still got enough currency that it's still there. It's a pricey show.
And it's still going to be there next year, isn't it?
Absolutely. So much so that they've allowed people to go and sort of make, you know, big thing out of it, rather than do what a lot of distributors do, is if they feel it's waning, just shut it down and find something that isn't, something new. So it's still got currency and capital. If it's not your thing, I understand that. The Sea Devils was not my thing. But for some people it was, and that's great.
I think that brings us to the end of the episode, doesn't it, really?
I don't know. Would you be able to press the right button?
She'll give it a go. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will be back with a new show soon. Until then, goodbye. Oops.
Goodbye. It's good, isn't it? Hmm?
There you go. Just to prove I can press buttons.
I don't understand how someone who, as a living, works with technology is so constantly at battle with it.
Well, do you know what? When I pressed the first time, I was going for the correct rumble, and I thought, maybe it'd be a bit more fun if I just pressed that. I was just... It's just the anarchy that I have, that I fight against daily. And, you know, generally I win, but, you know, occasionally it breaks
through. Well, you got to let yourself have your fun.
Well, there you go. Exactly.